Syria has long been in Washington's sights as a state sponsor of terrorism, a friend of Iran, and an enemy of Israel. But the reality is more complicated. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad cooperated with the United States in the months following 9/11. And the country arguably has an interest in seeing the war in Iraq resolved, in part because it is now home to more than 500,000 Iraqi refugees. President Assad was once hailed as a potential reformer, but more recently, he's been criticized for his handling of domestic dissent and international conflict, including the war in Lebanon. In this interview with Reese Ehrlich, Assad discusses these issues and warns of the dangers of an American attack against Iran. Ehrlich began the interview by asking Assad if he thought the Bush administration was actively planning to overthrow Syria's government.
These are rumors. I can only talk about facts, but the most important thing, whoever think about destabilizing Syria, he should know that he is going to destabilize the region. We are the safety valve in the region.
The safety valve?
Yeah, safety valve in the region.
In what way?
In a geopolitical way. Mm-hmm. Geopolitical way. The history of Syria, the role of the Syria in the region, the link between this Syria and our neighbors, social links, ideological links, and interest links with the region. So the whole region is connected with each other.
Yeah. You mentioned that in the past Syria has helped provide intelligence about terrorist groups, al-Qaeda and so on. Explain that, and when did that cooperation end?
Actually, we started cooperating with the United States. We took the initiative to cooperate with the United States intelligence after 11th of September. And we succeeded in preventing more than 7 plots made by al-Qaeda against the United States. The cooperation stopped last March in 2005 because of mistakes were made by the United States first, second, because of their political position or stand against Syria.
Mm-hmm. What were the mistakes?
Technical mistakes that led to losing many opportunities to go forward in fighting terrorism in the region.
That was also around the time in which the U.S. was pressuring Lebanon to demand the return of Syrian troops and the charges about Hariri and so on and so forth. So did that, in general, that sour the political atmosphere?
Definitely.
Do you think the Bush administration will militarily attack Iran, using the issue of nuclear weapons development, supposedly, that Iran is involved in? Do you think that's likely?
Anyway, it's a hypothetical question, but if we want to talk about logic and the interest of the region and of the United States and the rest of the world, is not to do such a thing, because the whole world will pay very expensive price.
What would be the consequences if the U.S. did either try to impose sanctions or even a military strike on Iran?
Sanctions won't do anything. From the experience in Iraq and many different countries, sanctions won't do anything. But the consequences of destabilizing the region by sanctions, by military actions, by any kind of means, will lead to destabilizing the whole Middle East. And the answer is, what the consequences of destabilizing the whole Middle East on the rest of the world?
I mean, Iran has a number of options should something like that happen. For example, it can work with its supporters in Iraq to attack U.S. forces when they're not doing that now. It has influence with Hezbollah, and that it could inflame the situation there. Do you think those would be some of the examples of the destabilization?
I think the question should be asked to the Iranian. I mean, what they're going to do. But for me, the consequences are much deeper. If you look at Iraq as an example, you cannot talk about factions or parties or groups. It's much more deeper than this. It's chaos, total chaos. It's going to be a total chaos.
President Bush made a surprise visit to Baghdad today. Zarqawi was killed. Do you think that the Bush administration is trying to say that they're making progress now in Iraq? Do you think, well, first of all, do you think that's accurate? Or do you think the U.S. in some ways has actually already lost the war?
Lost the war and making progress are linked together. So we have to ask what the goal first. So if the goal democracy, the answer is very clear. The situation is much worse than before, even during Saddam, that we don't defend in Syria. If they talk about better living standards, the situation much, much worse than before. If they are talking about development, about infrastructure, about anything, so everything is worse. So that depends on what the goal of the war. You cannot talk about occupation. I mean, occupation is not the goal of the war. This is the mean occupation. But if we talk about the military side of the war, killing Americans every day in Iraq, and of course killing Iraqis, tens of Iraqis every week, is that the goal of the war from the military point of view? I don't think so. The answer is very clear for us.
Mm-hmm. But even in a military sense, the U.S. no longer controls certain areas of Iraq. It's very unstable, even in the south, in the Basra area. It would seem that even from a strictly military standpoint, the situation has gotten worse from the U.S. Yeah. Do you think that's true?
It's self-evident. No power, no military power in the world, even the United States, can control a small country militarily. You can only control a country if the people want you to control it. When the people are against you, and this is very normal, to have the people against the occupation in Iraq and in any other country, you're going to have resistance, and you will not control anything. This is normal.
What do you think the outcome is going to be if you said a few years from now? What do you think the situation will look like in Iraq?
If we want to talk about the future of Iraq, we should talk about a consensus about something. And normally the future of Iraq is going to be inside the constitution. So far, and according to what we hear from many Iraqi delegations who come to Syria, they're not satisfied with this constitution. Some factions think they are oppressed. So this needs to be re-evaluated. I think this is the core of the future. If there's no consensus about the constitution, you will have conflict or maybe a civil war. This is the core event. Not having a new government or having some election. This is good. We support in Syria, we support the political process, but this is not enough. This is for the short term, it's okay. For the long term, no, it's not enough.
Sources have told me that you've been involved in promoting some negotiations between the Sunni resistance and the government. Is that accurate?
Actually, what we try to promote is the unified Iraq. This is only what we, the only thing. We try to see what's in common between the whole Iraqis, mm-hmm. and we try to make some negotiations, some marketing, some ideas that the Iraqi would think it helps unifying Iraq or keep it unified. So far, and this is how we put our role. As in general.
But specifically, have you helped facilitate some talks between the resistance, the people opposed, fighting the United States and the Iraqi government?
Actually, the delegation that comes to Syria, we don't know if they are resistance or not. They are Iraqis. And they don't know. Nobody knows who are the resistance unless the Iraqis. So don't believe if anyone tells you that he knows who the resistance is. But definitely, most of the Iraqis that we meet, they are supporting the resistance, at least politically.
And are you trying to facilitate those political supporters to hold negotiations with the government?
Yeah, we always say that we are ready to help in any way. But do you mean having conference or such a
thing? Yeah, or actual negotiations to resolve political differences, that sort of thing.
Definitely, Syria is open for this, and we tried. We made some effort in that sense.
There's been recent deaths on the beach in Gaza. Hamas has ended its ceasefire with Israel. It seems like a very great struggle is re-emerging now in Palestine. What is your prediction for the next short-term period in Palestine?
From our point of view, it's something between the Palestinians, something humanitarian. We consider them as brothers. But I think the Palestinians are paying the price of Oslo Treaty in 1993. And this first. Second, they pay the price of the paralyzed peace process, especially after the 2000 negotiation Camp David and the deadlock that they reached between the Palestinian and the Israeli, and the negligence of the American administration of the peace process in general. Yeah.
I'd like to ask some questions about the situation here in Syria. There was this Damascus-Beirut letter, and 13 signers of that have been arrested. Could you explain why and when they might be released?
Actually, it was written by a group in Lebanon who invited the United States to occupy Syria. So this was made in cooperation with them. So this is treason. Yeah, this is considered as a treason. So now, by the law, by the Syrian law, they should go to court. Now they are in the court. Yeah.
So are they going to be charged, formally charged?
I don't know. That depends on the court. So yeah.
So there's no immediate plans to release them then?
No, you cannot. You know, when they are under the court's authority, nobody can help them.
Some Kurds in Syria do not have citizenship. I've heard different numbers. Yeah. Some people say 70,000. Someone said as high as 300,000. Yeah. And someone told me that there is a law that is awaiting your signature that would allow them to have full Syrian citizenship. Is that accurate? And if so, when will that be signed?
Yeah. It's a long story. It started in 1962 when many Kurdish immigrants from neighboring countries came to Syria for a conflict that used to happen in neighboring countries. So in 1962, they were given the Syrian nationality, and there were some, flaws in the procedures. And that caused social problem. Later was used as political problem. Now we decided to solve this problem by giving the Syrian nationality to the rest of the family that they couldn't get this nationality. About the number, the signature is waiting to specify the number according to certain documents. Who's his brother? Putting some criteria like who came to Syria, when. There is things like these, technical things. Mm-hmm. So it's not political.
Can you give me some rough idea how many? How many Kurds there are?
Yeah, you gave me the answer in your question when you said roughly 3,000, 300,000 or 70. Mm-hmm. Actually, some says 100. Yeah, so we should be more precise, because if you don't solve it precisely, you will create another problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there also a political dimension to this? Because the Kurds, certainly in other countries, are a volatile force. The U.S. certainly wants to use the Kurds for its own purposes in other countries. So is part of this a dynamic of a political as well as just a technical one?
For us.
For you.
If they use it, they can use it as political, and some use that as political weapons. But actually, it's social, more social than political for us. We don't see it as political. We don't have political problems. Who's Syrian is Syrian. He's like any other citizens. Who's not Syrian is not Syrian. He should go back to his country or to be here as resident, not as citizen.
The New York Times last year ran a magazine article where you said that you were preparing the groundwork for a multi-party law, and that it would be ready maybe in 2 years or so. Kind of, what's the progress on that?
Yeah. First of all, to make dialogue. When you say party law, this is the first time in our history to have multi-party law. That doesn't mean that we don't have multi-parties. We have, but we are having more modern law to have more political freedom for the parties in Syria. So the first thing to do is to make a dialogue, because this will define the future of Syria. We said it takes about, let's say, a year of dialogue to define what the frame that you're going to put the dialogue in. Then after the dialogue, you decide. So it's going to be national dialogue. It's not dialogue inside the government. It's national.
Is this dialogue starting now?
No, now we're starting putting the ideas. So some intellectuals now, yes, they started not the dialogue, while having some suggestions from different parties, different group of intellectuals, different politicians. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to collect all that. Then we're going to make proposals. So the proposal will be the base of national dialogue.
And do you have an idea when that national dialogue will actually start?
When we have an idea when they're going to stop the making pressure on Syria and to distract us in trivial fights everywhere around us, we'll have more time.
So yeah. The Bush pressure on Syria is having the opposite effect then?
Definitely. This is definitely. We don't leave isolated from our region. We live in daily contact with it, and we'll be affected with all the problems in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does Syria plan to demarcate its borders with Lebanon? And then a second related question, or open embassies between the two?
Yeah. The first part about the borders, we had a formal letter from the Lebanese Prime Minister, and we sent him a formal reply, that we are ready to demarcate the borders. We don't have any problem, because we have such a problem with Jordan a few years ago, and we solved it. About the embassies, as a concept, we cannot say you don't want to have embassy in another country, as concept. But that needs a normal relation. Now we don't have this normal relation with the Lebanese. So it needs better relation to discuss this issue.
What kinds of issues would have to be resolved in order to have normal relation?
First of all, not to have a government that works against your country. And second of all, you need the Syrians to feel that they have real neighbors, not a cradle or not a hub for terrorists to come and do such terrorist acts in Syria.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying some like these, I think it was a week ago, there was a terrorist attempt to take over the TV station. Was that, you're saying that came from external forces from Lebanon?
Actually, no. This event in particular, it wasn't made by a certain country. Actually, it was only an internal issue. Mm-hmm. But it's coming as effects of our neighboring countries' conflict, especially Iraq. Mm-hmm. This is the result of what's going on in Iraq.
Who were the forces, politically speaking, who were the forces that were involved in that? Do you know yet?
The group, you mean?
Yeah.
Only the group.
What was the group?
Terrorists, actually extremists. Extremists, but actually most of those groups that we've been facing for the last 2 years, from our investigations and interrogations, they were formed as a reaction to what's going on in Iraq. As a reaction to the war, like the jihadists, they think the United States occupied Muslim country, so they have to fight the United States. So whoever doesn't fight the United States should be fought. That's how they think.
One last question. What would it take to improve relations between the United States and Syria now? Are there any steps that could be taken that would improve?
Definitely by the United States, not by Syria, because we did a lot and we couldn't get any result because they don't have the will. So first of all, they should know and they should understand the situation in the region. They should appreciate the role of Syria in the region. They should know that we have common interest that they don't see. I think they should be neutral in dealing with our causes. That's how we can and get back our relation to normal.
So do you want to be any more specific about your causes and that they should change?
Yeah, definitely. The most important thing, our occupied land, Golan Heights, the United States should take into consideration that we see everything in Syria through our occupied land. Without talking about peace process, in order to get this land back, what the benefit of this relation?
Anything else you would like to add in a message to the American people?
Yeah, I think after the 11th of September, which was a very tough lesson, not to the United States people, to everybody in this world, first of all, you should learn more about what's going on behind the ocean all over the world. You should send more people, more delegations to meet with other cultures, to discuss with them, to know the facts, not to be isolated away from the rest of the world.
You've been listening to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad as interviewed by Reese Ehrlich. For more interviews, visit motherjones.com.